We get the hour underway by welcoming to the program a woman who founded People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals some 40 years ago. She's the author of a number of books, including Save the Animals, The Compassionate Cook, and a brand new one entitled Animal Kind, Remarkable Discoveries About Animals and Revolutionary New Ways to Show Them Compassion. We're pleased to be joined by Ingrid Newkirk. Ingrid, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rich. My pleasure.
This is a wonderful book that you've written along with Jean Stone. What did you hope for people to learn by reading Animal Kind?
Well, thank you. I think people do like it, if they like animals at all. It's divided into two parts. As you said, the first part is these remarkable discoveries about animals. And I wanted to really blow people away with how wondrous their animals' emotions are, their communication abilities, their intelligence, what good parents many of them are, how faithful they are as companions, and that they have senses that we've either lost or in many cases we never had, that allow them to do things that we could never do without technology. And the second part is about now that we know who animals are and that we're more linked rather than ranked, that we should treat them as other individuals, other nations even, and it should inform our behavior. We can find fabulous things that we can do these days that don't involve harming animals and killing them and taking things away from them. So it's for people who care about animals at all and prepare to have their jaws drop when they see how fabulous they are and then what they can do about it.
Well, yes, and you reel us right in with the first animal we encounter in the book. Can you share a little of the story of Rico the Border Collie?
Well, Rico is not unique, which is pretty phenomenal. Rico is a border collie who, and there are many of these examples. If he could actually name, if you gave him the name of a toy, he could go into the room next door and pick that toy out of a heap of 100, 200, 300 toys. And there was one dog who actually could pick out a toy from 1,000 toys. He knew 1,000 names of toys. And what was interesting in both cases is that someone said the name of a toy the dog had never heard before. And that dog went into the next room, looked at the heap of toys, couldn't figure out, what are you talking about, came back, cocked his head, and the person said it again. And the dog went next door, rummaged around, and came back with the only toy he'd never seen before. And that was the toy that they had mentioned.
Part of the issue, I think, is, as you point out in the book, that human beings tend to think of intelligence as being part of a continuum, and that's not always the case.
No, it isn't. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that only human intelligence counts, because Jane Goodall once said, you know, you could drop some super intelligent person in the middle of the jungle with a baby chimpanzee, and who would do better? You know, the chimpanzee would know what leaves to put over their head when it was raining, which plants they could and couldn't eat, how to survive and thrive, whereas the person would probably not make it. So when we know that we need, for example, a GPS, or we need to ask someone directions, or we need a map, we're lost without them, usually. We have a very poor sense of direction, studies have shown, as human beings. We're just useless. But animals, they guide themselves by the stars, the position of the sun, the Earth's magnetic field, even low-frequency radio waves. And we didn't even know there were radio waves until, I don't know, when was Marconi, 100 years ago or less. So, yes, there are different ways. There is, however, a test that ethologists who study animal behavior have used called the mirror test. And it's supposed to be an intelligence test. If you show tribal peoples, human beings, a mirror for the first time, they'll usually attack it. They think that it's someone else coming for them. Chimpanzees get around, just as tribal peoples do, to recognizing themselves in the mirror and realizing, oh, that's me. And a little fish called the wrasse, who is also known as the teeth-cleaning fish, because big fish actually line up in order to get their teeth cleaned by him. You can see it on the National Geographic Channel, like you go to the dental hygienist. And he can recognize himself or herself in the mirror and start preening, just like Kim Kardashian.
I was fascinated with the story of the blind mole rats and how they're able to navigate.
Yes, and there are so many other ways that animals can feel their way. They can sense their way. They can hear their way through things. There's just been a study, actually, with dolphins, where dolphins who are blindfolded, and I'm not in favor of this, but the researchers do this. They blindfold the dolphins, and they ask them to mimic what a human being is doing in the water. They can't see that human being, but they sense that they're either turning in circles or they're doing a handstand, and they'll imitate exactly what they're doing because they can pick up with echolocation, with feeling the waves, all sorts of things, just the way dogs now, we know, can actually anticipate that someone's biochemistry has changed, their body chemistry has changed, and they're about to have an epileptic seizure.
Communication between and among animals is incredible to learn about as well, and I was taken with, well, the subtlety of the way cows communicate.
Yes, and we didn't know this for eons, but cows actually, in addition to being clever, if you allow them to be clever, because they can operate a water pump just by watching for enough time or open a gate latch with their tongues, they use very subtle facial changes that another cow can see and we don't notice. It's the same way we've figured out, if you look at a horse will use her ears and her tail to communicate. You know, all these animals have subtleties that we don't know about. A tree frog will tap out messages on bark, and an elephant will be able to send messages subsonically a mile or 2 miles away to another herd to say, I know there's a drought, but I've just found a water hole, or guard your children. Someone is collecting them to go to a zoo, or they don't know where they're going, but collecting them. And the herd of elephants a mile or two away know what that message means. To us, it's just a rumble, but to the other elephants, it's a distinct message. It's a communication that they know the meaning of.
We're talking with Ingrid Newkirk on Downtown. Her book is Animal Kind, and there is love in the animal kingdom. Is it a stretch to say that sea turtles may be the gigolos of the animal world?
There's a lot of that going on in the animal world, but one of the things I like to concentrate is the wonderful fidelity that crops up, perhaps in unexpected places.
Yes, the prairie vole, that's who you want to model yourself after.
Well, what about the pigeon?
Yes.
The pigeon, you know, people despise them often, and they call them flying rats, but we could learn a thing or two from them. The male and the female pigeon, they not only bond with what's basically their high school sweetheart, and they're with that partner for life unless some accident occurs, but the male and the female, each of them makes milk for their baby in their crop, that little bit under their beak, their neck. And they take turns feeding their children and looking after them. So if you see two pigeons and one has their beak down the other one's, they could be kissing because they're very, very sensuous birds, but they also could be feeding their baby.
As you mentioned, the second half of the book is about new ways to show compassion for animals once people have learn to appreciate them even more by learning the first half. And experimentation on animals has been around literally forever, but we are learning new ways to do that.
Yes, and there are very exciting advances. It used to be, you know, we'd say that we need to move away from the patter of little feet in the laboratory. A lot of mice, and mice are just small mammals like me or a dog, only smaller, they feel pain, they feel fear. And yet they've been the object of convenience because they're small, they're easy to handle, they're cheap, and so on, which is not very scientific. It's So everything is done to them. But nowadays, we do have things that are so exciting, like organs on a chip. You can have a human lung on a chip. Whole human DNA is on the internet. And we have these high-speed computers. You can program them with human information, not information from a rat or a beagle, and you get information back as to what a substance will do if you give it to a human being, which is relevant. And it's particularly relevant. You see these ads on television now for, you know, if you've been hurt by this drug or that drug, here are the lawyers who can help you. It's always the case that 95% of drugs that are tested on animals go on not to work satisfactorily in human beings. So we need to get away from this old method of doing things. And people can help just in the simplest ways. You go to the supermarket or the pharmacy, you buy a shampoo or makeup or a floor cleaner, you can look for the Leaping Bunny logo or the words not tested on animals, no animal ingredients, and you'll be doing something good.
Yes, and as you say in the book, Ingrid, put your money where your values are.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. The power of the purse, I like to call it, because when people say, I'm just one person, what can I do? You are super powerful because you might give $100, say, to an animal protection group. And that's fantastic. They need it to get investigations and all the things they're doing. But then if you go to the store and you buy things that come from hurting and killing animals, you'll be spending thousands in a year. And so if you can step away, today everybody knows what a vegan is. It's not a person from Las Vegas. You can get a vegan cookbook. You can buy taste-alikes that will not deprive you of any taste, but will not have you supporting the slaughterhouse. And the same is true. Nobody needs fur anymore. We're not survivalists. We don't need leather anymore. We've got pineapple leather and leather made from grapes and cactus and apple skins. You don't even notice unless you look at the label. And if you've got a kid in school or your teacher or parent, there are now these synthetic frogs
right.
that you can cut up, take the organs out, not dangle them in front of a little girl, the real one, but they're synthetic. And it's just the same, except it's clean, there's no formaldehyde, and you didn't destroy wildlife, take it from the environment. So there are a million things you can do.
I have, I think since I was a small child, I've never enjoyed circuses. The chapter on animals as entertainment, I found particularly sad that it, even in television shows and in movies, that is not an easy life for the animals.
Oh, it's so terrible. I mean, can you imagine? Many of them are wild, of course. And an elephant particularly. I'm so glad there is no longer a Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey circus that's folded up its tents and gone home. And that's happening with circuses using animals across the country because elephants chained up for life, swaying back and forth, going out of their minds. Tigers turning around and round in the cages, bears being lugged from town to town. We don't need any of that. We've got virtual reality. We've got all these wonderful entertainments on the internet. We've got super games that kids can go. They won't run out into the street anymore to see the animal circus. And we have things like Cirque du Soleil, which doesn't use any animal performers. It uses human acrobats and fire eaters and trapeze artists, and they're phenomenal. And, of course, they're paid, and they get to go home at the end of the day. And if they don't want the job, they can quit, which the animals can never, ever do. They'll die in the circus. So, yes, we've got fabulous amusements now. Even these SeaWorld kind of what we call amusement parks, they're marine parks. Those poor orcas and those dolphins who are in a cement tank can't use their sonar. They chew on the bars underneath the water, and they're just swimming in their own waste. Don't go.
The book may change the way you think about animals. It's called Animal Kind, Remarkable Discoveries About Animals and Revolutionary New Ways to Show Them Compassion. Ingrid Newkirk, thank you so much for joining us to talk about the book today.
Thank you very much.